Hare Krishna, good morning. So today we're going to hear the instruction of the best of men, Rishabdev, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Kalakanta Prabhu asked me first to do the three verses you have in your book. Actually, I will ask Surit, will you do those three verses? This is from Rishabdev's teaching. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. I think we need to go back to okay, so now we are reading from the summary. Who would like to read?
Chapter 2. Priyavarta Vrata renounces his kingdom and his son Agnidhara becomes the king. Desiring a son, Agnidhara performs austerities to please Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma sends him a beautiful heavenly girl named Purvachitti, and Agnidhara begets Maharaj Nabhi. Chapter 3. The Supreme Lord Vishnu appears at the sacrifice of King Nabhi and agrees to become his son Rishabdev.
Chapter 4. Understanding his son's popularity, Maharaj Nabhi installs Rishabdev as the emperor of the world.
So Lord Rishabdev is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he came as the son of Maharaj Nabhi. Maharaj Nabhi did the sacrifice, and the priest very humbly asked the Supreme Lord if he will come as his son, and he agreed. And then the story goes on that after everyone saw Rishabdev qualities, they become very attracted, and Maharaj Nabhi renounced his kingdom. He decided to give the kingdom to Rishabdev, and he went to the forest. He went to the Himalaya, actually, and he did austerities, and he went back to Godhead. So Rishabdev had how many sons, anyone know? 100 sons. Were they Kshatriyas or Brahmanas or... Some of them were sannyasis. They were mixed. They had different qualities. They were very qualified and different... Some of them took sannyas, some of them were to become kings. And one time while he was traveling with them, he spoke those verses we will read today. And that is considered to be the essence of what we know about Rishabdev. We don't know much about him. I mean, the Bhagavatam speak about him, but that's the essence of his teaching. And he's speaking to his sons, and actually all of us are his sons because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Krishna says in the Gita that everyone is his son, so he's speaking also to us. And those instructions are very, how to say, they're very straightforward. They speak from a very high level, the level of the soul. And it's different, for example, from Canto 4, I'm sure you spoke about Puranjana and the story that Narada Muni tells, and He tells the king there was a person and he was engaged in sense gratification and it wasn't good. But here Rishabhdev is pointing the finger to his sons. He says, don't be engaged in fruitive activities. It will cause you misery. Don't do this. Don't do that. It's very direct preaching. And he can do it because they are his sons. So let's read the verses and then we'll go back and go deeply into the first verse in this section and read Prabhupada's purport and try to understand. So we'll do again the 551. Satsurit, you want to do the Sanskrit of 551? Just one time, and then if other people want to chant, they can chant. The whole verse, yeah. And then other people will chant, then we do the. We'll read the rest of the verses. You know what? Let's first do the English. Let's first read all the English of all the 9 verses, and then we'll go back to the Sanskrit. So, anyone like to read the English?
Lord Rishabhdev told his sons, "My dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever."
Thank you. One can attain the path of liberation from material bondage only by rendering service to highly advanced spiritual personalities. These personalities are impersonalists and devotees. Whether one wants to merge into the Lord's existence or wants to associate with the personality of Godhead, one should render service to the Mahatmas. For those who are not interested in such activities, who associate with people fond of women and sex, the path to hell is wide open. The Mahatmas are equal poised. They do not see any difference between one living entity and another. They are very peaceful and fully engaged in devotional service. They are devoid of anger, and they work for the benefit of everyone. They do not behave in any abominable way. Such people are known as Mahatmas.
Those who are interested in reviewing Krishna consciousness and increasing their love for Godhead do not like to do anything that is not related to Krishna. They are not interested in mingling with people who are busy maintaining their bodies, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. What is eating? They are not.
They are not attached to their homes, although they may be householders, nor are they attached to wives, children, friends, or wealth. At the same time, they are not indifferent to the execution of their duties. Such people are interested in collecting only enough money to keep the body and soul together.
When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he has already received a body, which although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. Therefore, I think it not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification, by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another.
As long as one does not inquire about the spiritual values of life, one is defeated and subjected to miseries arising from ignorance. Be it sinful or pious, karma has its resultant actions. If a person is engaged in any kind of karma, his mind is called kamatmaka, colored with fruit of activity. As long as the mind is impure, consciousness is unclear, and as long as one is absorbed in fruit of activity, he has to accept a material body.
living entity is covered by the mode of ignorance, he does not understand the individual living being and the supreme living being, and his mind is subjugated to fruitive activity. Therefore, until one has love for the Lord Vasudeva, who is none other than myself, he is certainly not delivered from having to accept the material body again and again.
Even though one may be very learned and wise, he is mad if he does not understand that the endeavor of forced sense gratification is a useless waste of time. Being forgetful of his own interest, he tries to be happy in the material world, centering his interest around his home, which is based on sexual intercourse and which brings him all kinds of material miseries. In this way, one is no better than a foolish animal.
The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and the female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine.
When the strong knot in the heart of a person implicated in material life due to the results of past action is slackened, one turns away from his attracted to home and wife and children. In this way, one gives up the basic principles of illusion, I and mine, and becomes liberated. Thus, one goes to the transcendental world.
So let's now do text one. You want to change the transcript of text one, line by line?
Rishabha Uvacha.
Rishabha Uvacha.
Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke.
Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke.
Kastan kaman arthirid bhujam ye. Tapo divyam putra kayena sattvam. Subhyedyasmad brahma sukhyam tvanantam.
So Rishabdev Uvacha, Lord Rishabdev said, I am this deha, body, deha bhajam, of all living entities who have accepted material bodies, nirloke, in this world, Kashtan, troublesome. Kaman, sense gratification. Arte, deserves. Vit bujam, the stool eaters. Which? Tapa, austerities and penance. Divyan, divine. Putra ke. My dear sons, yena, by which, sattvam, the heart, subayat, become purified, yasmat, for which, brahma sukhyam, spiritual happiness, to, certainly, anantam, unending. So Lord Rishabdev says, not this body, and he means not the human body is meant for sense gratification. There are so many other kinds of bodies. How many kinds of bodies are there? 8,400,000. And he said, this body is not for that. There are so many other bodies, but this body has something unique that other bodies don't have? Anyone like to guess? Intelligence. What do you mean by intelligence? I mean, can you elaborate? It's true. Where's the mic? There are different kinds of intelligence.
Can actually explain past the body and go into to read scriptures and understand scriptures in order to find it. You can get knowledge to call upon it. They can't understand scriptures. So we have the intelligence to understand.
So the intelligence to understand spiritual matters, to understand that we are something behind our body.
Prabhupada describes intelligence as being of two qualities. He said one is the ability to be able to discriminate very nicely, and he said the other is that one would have a good memory to be able to remember what his position is and what happened to him in the past. That's the way Prabhupada describes intelligence.
Thank you. So Rishabdev, he explained that there are so many bodies, but this body is rare because there is an opportunity. And you can use it, he says, you can use it for sense gratification, but there are better things to do with it. It's like a computer. Let's say I buy a very complicated and expensive computer, and then I use it to hold the door open so people can come in and out. So I can use it, but if I invest so much in a computer and it has so many other functions, so don't use it for that. Don't use it for sense gratification. Use it for something else. And he will speak about what we can use it for. So the next verse is kashtan kaman, and those two things are, kashtan is troublesome and kaman is translated here as sense gratification. So understanding that there is something behind the body, we start to understand there are different things. Like yesterday, I'll go one step back. Yesterday I was speaking with one girl, and she came to Krishna Lunch. She's a good friend, and she used to serve Krishna Lunch. And she told me she have cancer, and she have to go to some treatment the next few weeks. And we spoke about it. And she's 20 years old. And it's a big shift in their way of looking at life. I mean, she's handling it very nice in my perspective. But I think when we get a little bit older, I think when we are 20, we think we can enjoy our body. The whole life is before us. There's so many things we can do. And when we get a little bit older, we start to understand, actually, I'm not this body. And when you get really old, you understand you are not your body. Because you trust the body. The body is our best friend when we are young. And she was telling me, I always treated my body nicely. I'm vegetarian. I was always exercising. And I don't understand why. And I didn't tell her, but I thought about it, that it will happen to all of us. When we are 20, we think, yeah, we can live nice life. Then you become 40, you start to see the gray hair, and you start to look at the mirror, is that me? Then you go 20 years more, and we all have this expiration date. Like I get salads or different things for Cheney Brothers, so we have this small sticker. And it says expiration date is this and that. And Vallabha said, no, I always tell him, use this salad first, because it's almost expires. We have 3 more days, 2 more days, 1 more day. So in the same way, we have some kind of invisible sticker that is our expiration date. And we will go 20, 40, 60, 80, maybe 100, and then we will expire. And the body that is our friend now will start giving us problem, because that's his nature. He start to dwindle, and things starts to break, and something that served me really nice 10 years ago, now I find difficult to do. I remember a year ago, me and Tsurit went to Israel, and I spent time with my father, and he's 83, and he's belonged to a club of old people that are survival from the Holocaust. And then one day they had like a tour for all those people, half day tour, and they were excited, and my father didn't want to go because he said, until you come from America and I have only 10 days to spend with you, I don't want to go. And I thought it's really important for me that he will go, because those are his friends. I'm coming only for a few days, but I thought it's important he will participate. So we made an agreement that we'll go with them to this tour. They were all, most of them, the youngest was 75, I think, or something. And we asked permission, and they said, you can go. So we went, and I was praying to Krishna that I don't want to waste my time there, but I want to do this service for my father. And actually, I got a lot of realization spending half a day as an old man with people who are 80 years and older, because the whole consciousness is different, and I learned to see it. How do you think when you are an old man? The first thing I saw was that they don't believe they are the bodies, because all the people we spoke with and become friends, they told me, what you see now, it's not really me. I was this and this and this. I was an engineer. I was in the army. I had a big motorbike, and I used to cross the whole country of Israel in 5 hours. So they don't believe who they are now. The problem is they believe who they were maybe 30 years ago. They believe that was me. Now you just see an old man, but that was me. And it was a big realization. It was very interesting. Every half an hour we have to stop and go to the restroom, and there is a long line, and it was very interesting, very striking, because I could see that will be me in 20, 30, 40 years, and I'm not this body. Then we came to one place. It was like a small museum who told the beginning of Tel Aviv in Israel, and they had interesting pictures from 1910. And one of those pictures was the strongest man at that time in Tel Aviv. He was a weightlifter. He was a very strong athlete. And he was with one hand holding the most beautiful woman at that time in Tel Aviv. She was a dancer or something. And I was looking at that picture, and I thought, where are they now? I mean, he was very strong, and she was very beautiful, and it was 90 years ago. No, it was 100 years ago. So where are they now? Where are their bodies? Who remember them? Who think about them? So I guess my point is, Lord Rishabdev says, don't believe you are this body. And if you believe, it will take some time, but in the end you will have to admit you are not this body. And then you will remember those verses. Because I admit, it's very heavy. When I read those verses, something inside of me is like, wow, it's so heavy and it's so hard. And how can you say such things to yourself or other people? And at the same time, that's the truth. We are not our body, and there is a soul, and it makes more sense to invest in the soul than in the body. And that's the level he's speaking from. The level of don't invest in sense gratification, but invest in the soul. I remember one story about one devotee that really touched my heart. I think I told it before, but I like to tell it again. It's one devotee in the Krishna Balaram temple, and he was a good devotee for many years. Then he had difficulties around being around the devotees, and he left the temple. And he started just to live in India and doing other things than devotional service. And he told how he went to one Kunj in I think it was Vrindavan. And he was there sitting and doing whatever he was doing. And then he saw a monkey. And the monkey came and he offered obeisances to the water and he entered inside the water. And this devotee had this realization that what will happen to me. This monkey was a devotee and he left probably devotional service. And now he still remembered to offer obeisances and take a bet in the Kunj, but he cannot do anything more, and he went back to the temple. He joined again the Krishna Balaram temple. So it's not only for other people, it's for us also. So Rishabdev, the next line, he say Tapo Divyam. He speak about austerities. And not just regular austerities, but Divyam. How does it translate? Divyam, auspicious? Divine. Divine austerities. So, I think we all know in this material world, everyone have to do some austerities. Is there anyone here that doesn't think we need to do austerities? I mean, even 4-year-old children know they have to do, to give up something to get something better. So Rich showed me this video. Someone sent her this video about, they did a research with the 4-year-old children about delaying gratification. They would put the children in the room, it's a scientific thing, and they give them a piece of a candy or marshmallow, and they tell them, if you wait 5 minutes and you don't eat the candy, will come and give you another one. And they put camera and they leave the room. And it's very interesting. It's very amusing. So you see the children and they kind of look at it. And for 4-year-old, it's like 10 hours to wait 10 minutes with a piece of candy in your hand. So you see them look at them and they look around and push it in their mouth. And some of them like trying. One girl was trying to smell it instead of eat it. So you see her smelling it. And another one tried to take the inside of the candy without the outside, like she dig a hole. And then after 20 years, they took like the names and those people. And after 20 years, they went and checked what happened to that those people. And they saw that those who didn't eat it, or those who waited for a long time, they are very successful people now. They like got degrees, or they have a very high management position. And those who, like they measured it, those who ate it after some time, and the people who ate it in the beginning, they are now usually in trouble. They are addicted to different things, so. I guess my point is tapasya is part of this world, as all of you know. All of you are studying, and studying is a tapasya. I mean, in the beginning, it's a nice romantic idea. I will learn to do this and that. But then after some time, you see it's a lot of work. Andres is like suffering. You like to elaborate why studying is an austerity? And just example of studying.
I mean, I study a lot, but Ankush studies more than me, and I haven't seen my roommate in like 2 weeks. I've seen him for like 5 minutes a day. He just studies all day long, and he'll be done after today, but he's definitely making a sacrifice for his future.
I remember there was one time living in that, in the Krishna house, one student who wanted to become a dancer. And I was amazed to see how much austerities he's going through. He was eating only very certain amounts of food because he cannot get fat, and he was exercising every day. And every morning I would see him and all his body is hurting because he was practicing dancing, and I thought it's such a huge austerity. You want to become a dancer and it's such a nice idea, but then when you when you do it, it's big, big austerity. And there are other examples. So austerities are necessary. And Rishabdev says not just regular austerities, he speak about divine austerities. So what are divine austerities? Anyone want to guess? Or not to guess, to say. What are divine austerities?
Chanting.
Why is it a divine austerity?
We don't want to do something and we have to do it austerity. So, chanting, coming to temple, going down, reading scriptures, all this.
Any?
Austerity is performed for the pleasure of Krishna.
That's a good definition. So something we do for the pleasure of Krishna, even if we don't want to do it, is an austerity. I agree. Any other kinds of austerities in spiritual life? Like this month is the month of Kartik, and we know usually devotees take vrats, or take some austerity, some extra austerity, because they know this month is very special, and you get, some people say 100 more, some people say 1,000 more. Prabhupada, I think, said both of them in different places, about whatever austerity you do in Kartik, you get more. Some devotees are taking vrats, taking a small austerity, an extra austerity for 1 month. Anyone here, don't tell me what's the vow, but anyone here is taking an extra austerity for Kartik? Don't tell what is it, because it's recommended not to say what is your vrat, but it's a nice time to do austerities in devotional life. So Rishabdev explained about tapasya, divine tapasya, and that is very... Actually, we didn't read the purport. I'm now just realizing. Let's read the purport. You want to read the purport?
Sure. Purport. In this verse, Lord Rishabdev tells his sons about the importance of human life. The word dehabak refers to anyone who accepts a material body. The living entity who is awarded the human form must act differently from animals. Animals, like dogs and hogs, enjoy sense gratification by eating stool. After undergoing severe hardships all day, human beings are trying to enjoy themselves at night by eating, drinking, having sex, and sleeping. At the same time, they have to properly defend themselves. However, this is not human civilization. Human life means voluntarily practicing suffering for the advancement of spiritual life. There is, of course, suffering in the lives of animals and plants, which are suffering due to their past misdeeds. However, human beings should voluntarily accept suffering in the form of austerities and penances in order to attain the divine life. After attaining the divine life, one can enjoy happiness eternally. After all, every living entity is trying to enjoy happiness. But as long as one is engaged in the material body, he has to suffer different kinds of misery. A higher sense is present in the human form. We should act according to superior advice in order to attain eternal happiness and go back to Godhead.
It is significant in this verse that the government and the natural guardians, the father, should educate subordinates and raise them to Krishna consciousness. Devoid of Krishna consciousness, every living being suffers in this cycle of birth and death perpetually. To relieve them from this bondage and enable them to become blissful and happy, bhakti yoga should be taught. A foolish civilization neglects to teach people how to rise to the platform of bhakti yoga. Without Krishna consciousness, a person is no better than a hog or dog. The instruction of Rishabdev are very essential at the present moment. People are being educated and trained to work very hard for sense gratification, and there is no sublime aim in life. A man travels to earn his livelihood, leaving home early in the morning, catching a local train and being packed in a compartment. He has to stand for an hour or two in order to reach his place of business. Then again, he takes a bus to get to the office. At the office, he works hard from 9 to 5. Then he takes 2 or 3 hours to return home. After eating, he has sex and goes to sleep. For all this hardship, his only happiness is a little sex.
Yanmaitunadi gahamedi sukham hi tucham. Rishabhadev clearly states that human life is not meant for this kind of existence, which is enjoyed even by dogs and hawks. Indeed, dogs and hawks do not have to work so hard for sex. A human being should try to live in a different way and should not try to imitate dogs and hawks. The alternative is mentioned. Human life is meant for tapasya, austerity and penance. By tapasya, one can get out of the material clutches. When one is situated in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, his happiness is guaranteed eternally. By taking to bhakti yoga, devotional service, one's existence is purified. The living entity is seeking happiness life after life, but he can make a solution to all his problems simply by practicing bhakti yoga. Then he immediately becomes eligible to return home back to Godhead, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita.
4.9 Jama karma chame devyam evam yo veti tavat ta taktva deham purna janma naiti mam iti so Arjuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna.
So I want to see if there are any questions. If not, we can speak a little bit about austerities in devotional service. Like, what does it mean to do austerities in devotional service? But first I want to see if anyone have any questions or comments. It's
I have a question. It's not from this verse. I think it's from the third verse. There's one line which said, one should do enough work to have enough money to keep the body and the soul together only. But my question, there's so many, in the Bhagavatam itself we read, so there's so many pure devotees who are kings and administrators, and I'm sure they have more money to, which is more than to keep their body and soul together. So how does this go?
So basically the question, is it okay to be rich if you are a devotee, or if it's okay to accumulate wealth if you are a devotee? Anyone wants to answer that one?
I'm just kidding. I say yes.
You like the question? You like money? Where is the mic? Good question.
Hare Krishna. It said Tejasiana Doshaya, which means that great personalities have a lot more facility for even material enjoyment without becoming entangled than we do, but we can't really imitate them. Just like the sun can evaporate urine and purify it, but we can't do that. We'll become contaminated. So we can't try to imitate these personalities.
The thing is, it's better not to have a lot of money. It's only for special souls to be rich and be a devotees.
When your heart's really pure, then it doesn't matter if you have a lot of opulence. But as long as it's not pure, then we have to practice renunciation.
Okay. Any other opinions? Gopa?
It's just what you do with it, not what you have, but what you do with it. But there's also that famous thing, when Krishna favors you, he gives you everything. When he really favors you, he takes everything away. But sometimes he gives it back too. But it's what you do with it. It's not what you have, it's what you do with it.
I have a question, not a comment. Last night in Bhagavad Gita class, we were reading 1148. It says, "O best of the Kuru warriors, no one before you has ever seen his universal form of mine. For neither by studying the Vedas, nor by performing sacrifice, nor by charity, nor by pious activities, nor by severe penance, can I be seen in this form in the material world." So can you explain, like, this Rishabhdev is saying, you know, you should, the body is meant for austerities, but then like in the Bhagavad Gita here, it was saying that, you know, it's more not, it's not so much by the austerities or the penance. And if, you know, you're not sure, then we can ask that question to anyone.
Now there are two questions. You have an answer.
To podivyam, that's the answer. He's saying austerity, but divine austerity, to do austerity for Krishna. So not just by austerity can one see Krishna, but on the other hand, to do austerity for Krishna as an offering, that's not done in order to see Krishna, but to please Krishna.
So chanting Hare Krishna would be under divine austerity.
Right. Exactly. Like what was the name? Rikasura? He was doing austerities in order to see Lord Shiva. And he was fasting, and then he finally began cutting off chunks of his flesh and offering them in the fire. And Lord Shiva said, all right, what do you want? You know? So, to po divyam, that's the very point of the verse.
That's how they get the wealth and strength. That's the key in this material world, to do austerities. And then we're speaking about which kind of austerity. And back to Sagar's question. So is it okay to be a rich devotee? It's a good question.
Just like in the spiritual sky, there's no more opulence than there is there. I mean, there's unlimited opulence, millions of times more opulence even than there are in the heavenly planets. But the difference is that there, all of the opulences are used to serve the Lord. However, in the material world, when we're still under the influence of the material energy, it's recommended by all of the great authorities, Lord Chaitanya. Even Prabhupada was so proud of his disciples that he used to say they work for Krishna, they don't accept one farthing. They're just working for Krishna's pleasure. Prabhupada was very proud of that his disciples were doing like that. They were serving just to please Krishna, nothing. And actually it's described, if you read in Prabhupada's books, he describes that a devotee, they take a vow of poverty, Vaishnavas. They take a vow of poverty so that they don't become entangled by the material energy. In the spiritual sky of the devotees there, they're all pure devotees and they're all liberated. So no matter what they're doing, no matter what opulences they have, they'll use it only for Krishna's pleasure. However, because we're still under the influence of the material energy, it's recommended that we stay very, very, very simple. We read that prayer every morning. We talk about how we should consider not to have any possessions, that prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So that's an important principle in devotional service. Prabhupada says devotees do. They take a vow of poverty. It's for the sake of their spiritual vessel, so they don't become enamored or attracted again by the material energy.
Thank you. So we have two opinions. It's better not to have money. One opinion is use the money for Krishna, and now Kalakanta Prabhu will give the counter argument.
I appreciate the point, Baba Sen Prabhu. The principle is to use everything for Krishna. Yukta Vairagya Uchite. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur was actually a fairly well-to-do man. So he wrote, Ye Dina Grihe Bhajana Deke Grihe De Golokabhaya. One day I was in my household and all of a sudden everything transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. So different people have different needs. There are devotees, for example, who are, well, it's a story of Lord Krishna going to the kingdom of Mithila. And there were two devotees who really wanted him to come, the king and a poor Brahmin named Shutadev. And the king, Bahulashva, was very opulent. And this Brahmin was very poor. And so they both invited Krishna. And Krishna was traveling with a group of sages like Sukadeva and Vyasa and Narada and others to visit. And so they both invited him. So he split himself in half. And he also split the whole party. They actually divided into two parties. There are two Sukadevs and two Vyasadevs. And so that way they could go to each home at the same time. So by that pastime, we can understand that Krishna doesn't evaluate the devotee on the basis of their material opulence or lack of it. Like Sudama was very poor, but then Krishna gave him all this huge opulence. And when he did, Sudama thought, oh, Krishna only gave this to me because he felt confident I could use it for him. So if a devotee gets opulence by Krishna's grace, then that means that Krishna trusts this devotee, okay, well, he can use this opulence. But devotees, in general, yeah, very simple, whatever Krishna sends. It's not that if Krishna gives me money, I will serve him. Just briefly, one story. There was a man who was praying to Krishna every day. Oh, Krishna, if you just let me win the lottery, just let me win the lottery. I've been doing so much service for you. This is the only one thing that I'm asking. Please just let me win the lottery. And then every day he's praying this for years and years and years. Still, he's not winning the lottery. And finally, he gets some message. Krishna sent him this message indirectly. Could you at least buy a ticket? So the point is that we are not, the devotee means not attached. Krishna may give us tons or he may give us nothing, but we are happy as long as we can serve Krishna. That was my counterargument.
I want to hear more opinions, and I really would like to hear some of the ladies, just because I appreciate also their point of view. Nanda Kumar.
I wanted to comment on the previous question about Tapo Divyam. So we see sometimes contradictory arguments in scriptures, one scripture saying that, but they are not contradictory because they are instruction at different levels of spiritual realization. So this instruction he's giving, he's beginning to give instruction and he's teaching somebody who is going to begin the spiritual journey. So he's saying that austerity is good for your purification. And then Krishna is saying that, but that's not enough. Simply by austerity, you cannot see me. You have to do bhakti also. So it's like to a student, we say, you have to go to school to become perfect. But that's not enough. You have to learn special degrees and special skills to be able to do the job. So that's all.
So what you're saying is austerity itself is not enough, but we need also to have bhakti.
These two instructions are not really contradictory. There Krishna is saying that is not enough. And here he's saying, at least you should do that. So it's like that.
It's two levels. Okay. Any more comments about if a devotee can be rich?
I just think this is an interesting verse and it was probably a little bit more, I don't know, applicable, maybe not so applicable or relevant in the 70s where young people were realizing that, my gosh, we don't have to do anything and be happier than ever before. And that was, I think, a sign of intelligence, and in, you know, to a certain degree. But what they did with that is they just became more, you would say, like enmeshed in animal behavior, right? But they were intelligent. They figured out, okay, we don't have to get a 9-to-5 job. We don't have to, you know, go to school and get our PhD. We can simply live on communes and go wild and have a lot of fun. I think this realization that what's the point of austerity, you know, and of course it's still happening. You know, we look at our parents, well, they're not happy, so why should I go through all the trouble? You know, they're not happy with, you know, whatever wealth they have, so I'm just going to, Why should I even endeavor? You know, and I think that's the amazing thing about Krishna consciousness is that suddenly there's an impetus to not be lazy. And that's the false renunciation. And sometimes we like renunciation of wealth. No, I think it's more like renunciation of your time. more than anything, where are you going to invest your time and your energy?
Speaking about finding satisfaction inside, and then you can see that people that didn't have before the drive to do austerities, when they join Krishna conscious, they become very efficient. They want to be very efficient and do service.
I mean, I know my personal example is I used to have a lot of free time. I used to work just bare minimum, you know, because I didn't need much, and I always wanted a somewhat simple life. And so, you know, I'd work 3 days a week, and that was enough. That was plenty. And I had tons of free time, and you know, now it's like free time is a luxury. It doesn't exist, and that's not, I mean, it's not right. I need to be more balanced like that. But I just find it interesting sort of how it works in the reverse. Mm-hmm. You know, at the same time, yeah, somebody else coming from a different situation who maybe was endeavoring, you know, but they hadn't come to that conclusion, well, I'm just not going to do anything and be happier. You know, they're like, well, I should do more or something like that. I just find it interesting how it sort of works in different circumstances and situations.
I was just going to say that money can definitely be a good thing, and since all of you are here and going to school, you have opportunities to make money in the future, and Ali has a huge list of things she wants to do to improve Krishna House, and she's setting up PayPal for getting donations from Krishna alumni students, so go ahead and make money for Krishna.
That's a practical advice from Mother Gita. Make money and donate it to the Krishna service.
I was noticing that in those devotees who had a lot of money, or those devotees, the pure devotees that didn't have any money, it was the consciousness that they were in that I appreciate, because even if they had a lot of money or if they didn't have any, at the end of life, they all did renounce and tried to engage more in austerity so that they could obtain the divine life. So I think it's not so much whether you have money or not, it's that your consciousness is that to obtain the divine life no matter where you are situated.
Yeah, I just want to see if I understood. So Mother Chaitanya, you say it doesn't matter, money is just something, but if you go deeper, it depends on your consciousness and what you do with that energy. If you make it to go back to God, it's okay to have money, to be rich.